How you doing, man? Channing. Nice to meet you. What's up,
how you man?
Doing,
it's an honor.
Right. Pleasure appreciate you. Yes, sir.
What up, dog?
How you doing, Fred? Good to meet you, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's going on, boss man?
Fred.
Okay.
Yeah. Baby. I know
you are. Charlie.
Who that cute?
She's a cute. She's a cutie pie.
Say, all right, mom. We need company now.
Hold up. Limitless. They can stomach cap in it. I father here to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. They can stomach cap in it. I father here to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up.
First off, welcome to Vegas. Welcome to The Pivot. Freddie T, Chan, I'm RC. We're here with Caleb Plant, and we're in his gym. Now, this is what we've learned about shooting great boxers. A lot of their gyms be hot as hell. And when I was getting dressed to come here, I was like, I might not need to wear this button up. But I walked in, and this is what happens, you know, when you got a sweet left hook, when you talk a great game inside the ring and outside, you get into a gym that is fully furnished. The air condition actually works.
Immaculate.
It is immaculate in here. Now, also too though, Caleb, man, this is how Rocky was training like this before he fought Clubber Lang the first time now. Yeah. So we just got to make sure, you know, you keep the main thing the main thing.
Absolutely, nah. Boxing's the main thing. I've been in plenty of gyms through my life though that no AC, no windows, no nothing. But, you know, we got a fabulous place here to train at DLX in Vegas. And, you know, we're super happy that True lets us come in and do our thing. So it's a nice spot. We really like it.
Yeah, man. So to our partners, Happy Dad, we appreciate you. To our sponsors, DraftKings, thank you guys for all the support, for all the viewers, for all the subscribers. We're going to keep trying to give y'all dope content. We thank y'all for everything that y'all have done for us throughout the first year. And we're going to keep it moving through 2023. You know, I made the joke, though, Caleb, about this gym being nice. You know, we've shot Deontay Wilder. We've done Errol Spence. And, you know, you mentioned yourself being in gyms that weren't like this. Coming from Tennessee and having the upbringing you had, you know, reading about you and having one of those lines say, there are people born with silver spoons, but Caleb Plant had to steal one. Mm-hmm. To come up the way you did, man, living in trailers, sleeping in the back of abandoned buildings on futons, what was that journey growing up like for you and how did it make you the man you are today?
Well, you know, I think I was able to learn a lot of lessons early and that otherwise I wouldn't have learned. And, you know, just being thrown in the fire early but I think the biggest thing is just, even at a young age, 9, 10, 11, just being mindful of the fact that, like, man, this isn't how I want to live. This isn't what I want the rest of my life to look like. And so from a real early age, like, I became really disciplined. You know, my father instilled that in me. Yeah, I definitely had a silver spoon. You know, it didn't come to me. I had to go get it. I had to work for everything. But, you know, those are where some of the best stories are created. When you start so low on the totem pole and you got so far to go, and it makes you not want to waste time because there's so much space between you and what you want to achieve that, you know, a straight line is the fastest way there and you really don't want to make no detours because it's already, like I said, so far away.
Like that, you're saying that's a tough story, and that's the platform we've created for people to get to know our guests and get to know their, you know, their legends like yourself. Your upbringing, the story is your dad built a little gym for you, yeah. And that's when you started boxing. Yeah. And I've also heard you say your mom wasn't around a lot. What was the family dynamic with young Caleb?
Yeah, my dad got with my grandpa, and they got a little bit of money together, opened up a real small gym. It may have just been like as big as this little spot that we're sitting in here. And it had tile floor, no mats. And to make a ring, we put tape down on the floor in a square. And when we would spar, we'd stand around and hold hands. And only a space for just like one heavy bag in the corner. You couldn't even work all the way around it. And when people would spar, you know, the tile would get slippery and wet and people would slip and fall. But, you know, it's nice to be in a gym like this now, but, you know, especially on the way up or at any point in your career, you know, you don't need all the fancy things. You don't have to have all the latest gear or all the latest, you know, the newest thing out. As long as you got, you know, a dream, something you want to, that you're passionate about, you know, you can make it there with passion. You don't have to have all the latest things. Family dynamic at home. My mom, she dealt with things and, you know, she drank a lot of alcohol and you know, various things like that. And so it was a lot of, it was chaotic at home, I'd say. A lot of fights, a lot of arguing, and just, it's like the boxing gym was like an escape for me. So when I was at home, it was like, you know, I'm somebody that nobody wants to be. Nobody would want to be in this position, have the clothes I have, or live in this type of house. But then when I could escape that and go to the gym, as soon as I walked through the door, I got to be somebody that, you know, even grown men were looking up to, and I got to be somebody that people wanted to be like. And it's like I became like addicted to that feeling, you know, and every day I got to like, it's almost like a drug, you know, for so many hours in the day, I get to go and escape all these things that I don't want to be around or want to be a part of. I get to be somebody, I get to be do something and push myself. And then as soon as I leave the door, I got to go back to being, you know, something that nobody wants to be. And I just became obsessed with that feeling of escaping that. And I've just been running it up ever since.
At what age were you then?
9 years old, yeah.
You know, that's pretty tough for a 9-year old, you know, just to have to deal with these things at home, then being able to find an outlet. You know, but even at 9, you know, I'm pretty sure you had to talk to yourself quite often. Did you ever go through depression during those times as a young kid?
Yeah. Definitely went through a whole array of, you know, emotions, whether it be being depressed, just being angry, being mad, feeling like I'm missing out. I definitely experienced a lot of those things, went through a lot of those things. It may be like when you're on the football field or playing basketball. Eventually, once you get off into doing what you love, it's, you know, it takes up so much of your mental capacity because either you love it or the workout is so hard. Eventually, all those things that were bothering you kind of fade away. And, you know, this thing that you're doing demands 100% of your attention because it's so hard and you don't even have the energy to be thinking about other things. So, you know, it was nice to be able to, like I said, escape that and get away and be able to be doing something I love that's pushing myself. And even at 9, you know, I didn't want to be the president. I didn't want to be, you know, a firefighter or a teacher or a scientist. I just wanted to be a fighter.
I think when you mention football players or you mention other sports, a lot of us say all the time whenever we're talking to those guys, this is what we wanted to do, right? That's the only job I ever wanted. I wanted to play football. I wanted to play football professionally. It wasn't necessarily just a dream. It was just a grind. It was something I was passionate about. And you being or becoming passionate about boxing and using it as an escape, now you get into the amateurs and you're seeing that the escape has now become a possibility for a career. And then you start to get into your pro career and you're winning and people are calling you sweet hands and you have all of these different things. When you finally made it to the point where that passion turned into something that was going to be a viable career, I could be a champion, how did those feelings of depression, those feelings of not wanting to be a certain thing start to change for you?
A lot of those things that I wanted to escape happened, you know, started to happen really early on in my life. But, you know, throughout my even young adulthood, you know, or even late teens, early 20s, you know, I had situations that were still going on in my life that I had to walk through the fire and still go to the gym every day and, you know, just put on that shield, put on that armor and keep on trucking. And but honestly, at 9 years old, like I said, it wasn't like, okay, I'm 20 now. This is what I can see myself having a career with this. It was like, no, 9 years old, 10 years old, this is all I'm going to do. I don't want to go to college. You know, school wasn't something ever that I was super good at. And so boxing was like my one way out, you know, even from an early age. And I knew that and understood that. I knew that, you know, you may be able to come from a certain place on the totem pole and continue to mess up and drift off and not stay focused and still make it in life. But when you come from the bottom, you know, there's not very many room for mistakes or errors. And so you got to walk that straight line. And I knew that early on. I don't know if it was my dad instilling the discipline and the mindfulness in me or just something that naturally occurred for me. But I knew early on, like, this is something that I got to make happen.
It seemed like the theme here was escape. And in 2015, you lost your daughter, your baby girl, Aaliyah. Mm. And throughout that year, you had 6 fights. Mm. I'm sure it was very challenging for you to have lost a daughter. Mm. And it seems that you use the ring for that escape. You have 4 knockouts that year, and I've never lost a child. But I can only imagine what one must feel to lose a kid. Could you take us through that year?
I'm about 19. I have this daughter, Aaliyah, and you know, everything is on track to be good, to be healthy, and you know, just to be like anybody else who goes through that process. And then very shortly after, finding out that, you know, she has a lot of issues, and she would have like 300, 400 seizures a day. She had a brain damage, you know, no motor skills. She couldn't sit up, she couldn't eat. She had to eat through a Mickey tube in her stomach. You know, 8 different medicines twice a day. He got a pump in her stomach. All these doctor's appointments downtown at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital. Having to sleep with, you know, a heart monitor and all these things, because sometimes at night she would just, you know, things would come up. You know, she was on life support 5 different times, 4 or 5 different times. And just having to, you know, sometimes we'd be in hospital for weeks at a time. And, you know, my first year I turned pro, I had 6 fights. My second year I had 4 or 5 fights. And so while most of these other professionals are doing their camp at home and sleeping in their bed and, you know, have all these, you know, normal luxuries, you know, for weeks at a time, I would be staying in the hospital on the little pull-out futon bed, and the doctors are coming in at night, and I gotta wake up in the morning, I go to training, I come back, you know, I'm spending time with her, then I gotta drive 45 minutes to strength and conditioning, I'm coming back, spending time with her, going home, getting more clothes or whatever has to get, you know, brought back to the hospital to be able to stay longer, then going running downtown, coming back, sleeping on the little futon, eating the hospital food, just, you know, not having the normal luxuries that these other athletes would have, but at the same time, maybe having more fuel being added to the fire. Mm. And that was a, you know, definitely a difficult time. And it just got to the point where it began to be too much for her, and she got put on life support for the last time. And I remember, you know, going and having that bedside conversation with her, like, you know, this isn't what you want to do anymore, you know. I'm not going to be mad at you, disappointed in you. And shortly after that, you know, her health started to decline rapidly, and they were like, hey, you know, either she can pass with this EEG machine, you know, on her head and all these wires and things attached to her, we can take this stuff off and clean her up, and, you know, she can look like what you'd want her to look like. And so that's what we had, you know, done, or cleaned up and all that. And then in 2015, you know, she passed away.
January 29th, 2015, 10:55, mm-hmm. I believe, was the time.
Yeah.
You were scheduled to fight in Philadelphia, and you have doctors come to you, and because the situation was so dire for so long, there were many times that you said you thought that would be the day, or you were told it could be the day. But this time you said to yourself, okay, I'm going to stay here. And in other instances, because you loved your baby so much, you know, you pleaded with her and you prayed that she wouldn't go. How did you finally get to a point as a father? Because the same way Fred was choked up, I was even just reading through it this morning and felt the exact same way. You know, we all have children. I have 2 daughters. I can't imagine what you had to see your daughter go through to finally get to a point where you said, it's okay, baby, and that daddy's going to be here.
Yeah.
How did you handle being able to have that conversation with your daughter?
You know, regardless of, you know, religion or ethnicity or background, you know, I don't think there's any life lesson that can prepare you for that. And in that moment, it wasn't even really about me being prepared. It's just, I wanted her to know if she was too tired, then, you know, don't feel like I'm going to be disappointed in you or upset or, you know, with you. Obviously, I'm going to be upset, but, you know, I'm not disappointed in you. And if it's your time, then, you know, you do what you got to do, and I'll just keep figuring out a way to keep, you know, pressing forward. And like you said, I did have a fight scheduled, and I'm torn because, you know, I'm sure all of us in the circle can relate too. You know, I'm the provider of my family. And at the time, it's not like I'm a millionaire or, you know, I'm barely a thousandaire. I'm the provider of my family. She's been on life support multiple times. Do I gotta go make, and it's like, you know, I know I'm staying, but then there's also this, like, do I gotta go make this money for my family? Do I gotta, you know, if not, we're gonna be behind on bills. We could lose this, we could lose that. You know, I don't come from a place where I can get back up and get help and, you know, but, you know, obviously as soon as they said no, this is a situation where, you know, this isn't like any of the other ones. I'm like, well, you know, say less, I'm not going anywhere. I'm gonna be right here. And, but.
You know, you fast forward from that, you know, you made promises that you would one day be champion. And 4 years later, you get an opportunity to fight Jose Uzgategui. And it's a fight that people don't believe you're gonna win. And I think you knock him down in the second, you knock him down in the fourth, you get wobbled later on in the fight and you end up winning the fight. What was that full circle moment like, starting at 9, having to go through losing Aaliyah, making promises that you'd one day be champion, and then finally reaching that goal?
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I mean, that moment was indescribable, really, just when they announced those words and the new. I mean, that's something that any kid who's ever halfway laced up a pair of boxing gloves, you know, dream of hearing one day. And just, you know, circling back to Aaliyah, it got to a point where, you know, I knew I wasn't going to get to do very many things that other fathers get to do with their daughter. Whether that be, you know, dropping them off at practice or, you know, them going to prom or waking up on Christmas, opening up Christmas presents or, you know, dancing or with each other, playing with each other. And so once she passed, it's not because I didn't get to do a lot of those things, me keeping that promise to her that I was going to become world champion. I mean, that was just something that was engraved in me. And it didn't matter who stood across from me that night. There was nothing that anybody was going to be able to do. Unless they were willing to take their last breath in there like I was, they were going to come up short. And so just going through that fight, being an underdog and, you know, people saying that he was going to do this and do that, and then coming out, you know, victorious in the way I did, dropping him twice. I caught a headbutt in the fourth round that cut my eye open, and, you know, that would have been an easy point to unravel and succumb to that excuse of, oh, I was supposed to lose anyways, and I got a headbutt I couldn't see. But, you know, just grinding through that like I have everything else in my life and coming out the other side victorious, yeah, one of the best moments of my life.
The RIP Aaliyah you wear, coming out and all, and that motivation, and then past that, just the motivation of watching your daughter fight. Mm. Like, you're her father, and you see her fight through all that, through the season, all you see that fight. And now even meeting you for the first time face to face, you know, a fan from afar, you have a, like, you're intense.
Very.
And watching you fight, you're intense. Like we, like RC brought up, Errol Spence, Floyd, Deontay Wilder, when we were around them, you hear him before you see him. You hear him in the gym talking and messing and making fun of people.
Yeah.
But then around Mike Tyson, I get more Tyson out of you, like just like a pit bull waiting to jump on somebody. Do you like fight with rage? Because Floyd says it all the time. He's like, I'm a prize fighter. I'm gonna go in here, I'm gonna get my check. Yeah. Like, where does that motivation come from? Because you got a lot more pit bull in you than I knew before I met you face to face.
No, I mean, I don't go in there emotional, you know, and circling back, you know, seeing Aaliyah go through those things, you know, it did motivate me. It's like, hey, you know, you know, I'm in my early 20s by the time I'm a grown man, you know, if I can see her go through this, you know, I can push hard, I can work through my last round, I can, you know, I can do anything if she can go through this. And, you know, going into the ring now, it's not like I go in there emotional or, you know, that's not the way you come out victorious. That's not the way boxing goes. You know, it's a thinking man's game. And, you know, I'm a thinking fighter. You know, I got a heavy IQ, I got a heavy bag of tricks that I can do in the ring. And, you know, it's just about, you know, it may seem like because this happened or that happened, I would use that and go in there raging. But, you know, over the years, you know, I could channel that and put it the way I want and go into the ring calm, cool, and collected and know that I have a, you know, a job to do. This isn't like I'm not some, you know, to me, that's not what boxing is about. You gotta channel it. Yeah, you gotta channel that, and you gotta use it the right way, or it's gonna get used against you.
Yeah, and your bag of tricks is to get around to that damn left hook, isn't it? Because if you stand up right now, I'm doing this.
I mean, yeah, Darrell, you know, he learned his lesson. But honestly, you know, if it was just about really him doing the same thing over and over, and me catching wind of that, and then using what he was trying to do against him. And, you know, again, if I was just out there winging him and trying to, you know, I wouldn't have been able to think of that in the moment because I was throwing that combination, but I was throwing it at a different tempo. And, you know, his defensive responsibilities, the way he was blocking and going about it, I realized that I had to change up that tempo and, you know, switch it up. And if I would, you know, then I may not think of that. I'd be too busy trying to.
How do you not get when a guy straight up tells you, I ain't letting no white boy beat me? You know, like that's the, you know, that's the thing in sports that we don't talk about a lot. It's playing DB, right? I can be honest with you right now. If I'm playing DB and I'm sitting across from Randy Moss, you accept that, or you sitting across from Santana Moss. I mean, anybody. Black, it's different than if Wes Welker go out here and cook me, yeah. Right? Cooper Kupp had to work so hard to earn the respect of the NFL because him being who he was but looking the way he did, it was sort of held against him in the respect that the other players would give him, but that's not something people say out loud, and boxing's different. When you step into that ring, bro, no matter what your trainer says, what your coaches say, you got to go do it. And for a man to test you just simply based on the color of your skin and say, you can't beat me because of that. How do you control rage in that type of situation to be able to focus on just fighting when a man is clearly disrespecting you?
I've been doing this a long time, so, you know, it's an unfortunate thing, but that's something I've dealt with for a long time. And, you know, especially coming on the scene early on, my first USA camp in 2010, I went to my first nationals. If you rank in the top four in the nation, you make Team USA. And then they take everyone in the top four from each weight class, and they send them to the camp at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. And so for that to be my first, I come in the top four, I rank third in the nation. People are like, man, who's this white kid? And I come to, you know, Team USA camp, and, you know, at first I did feel like an outsider, and people made me feel like one. Mm-hmm. Maybe they felt like that I wasn't serious about the craft, you know. I'm not sure, I can't say for sure, but maybe they felt like I wasn't serious about the culture. Mm. You know, so at first it's like maybe some people didn't want to respect me, didn't want to like me, but over time, you know, the next year I won the Gold Glove Nationals, I become Olympic trialist, I become Olympic alternate. You know, in between I'm going to all these other national tournaments, and I'm consistently ranking at a high number, you know, in these tournaments. I think people began to, okay, you know, Caleb, he's here for the long run. You know, he's not just here to, you know, act like he's cool or say that he can be a part of the boxing culture. You know, he's really living that life. And so, yeah, it's something that I've, you know, dealt with many times throughout my boxing career, but it's just more motivation to, because that's what they want out of you. You know, they want you to get riled up. They want you to get tense. They want you to get tight. That's why else does anyone talk shit to anyone, to try and get them out their game, to try and, so if I obviously know that's the reason, why would I give them what they want? Yeah. When if I can stay calm, I can stay cool, you know, I can prove that stereotype wrong.
You did the movement. I was going to ask about it.
Is that why you buried him?
Was the comment, why did you bury the man? And did you know you were going to bury him after you knocked him out?
Well, I didn't know I was going to do it after the fight, just in that moment. You know, that's the first thing that came to mind. And, you know, if I feel something, if I think something, I'm not one to shy away from how I feel or what I think. And, just burying the beef. You know, he had a lot to say. You know, he put the Bernard Hopkins, Joe Calzaghe skit up on his social media talking about, you know, I'll never let a white boy beat me. And then there was an interview that they had brought up from the past and him saying something somewhat similar. And, you know, between everything else, he called me and, you know, it was just time to bury all that. You know, enough is enough. And time to move forward to bigger and better.
You knocked Darrell out in the 9th round after your Canelo fight. Back in 2019, when you were crowned title champ, you lost your mom a couple months after that. And then in 2015, you came back and knocked some guys out after losing your daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to say, because I'm always the guy that give our guests their flowers, I think you belong here. Because you said a second ago that you were here for the long haul. Do you think that those moments of adversity, that during those moments, do they drive you more than, you know, anything else, you know, to set you up for those type of fights?
You know, I can't speak for everyone, but, you know, me, I know the best is brought out of me when I'm challenged. And that could be emotionally, that could be, you know, physically, but you don't want it to have to come to that. But I'm someone, I've got to be challenged in life to for the best to be brought out of me. You know, it's unfortunate those things happen, but for me, they only add, you know, fuel to the fire for me to go in there and not just win, but win in a way that, you know, in spectacular fashion. And, you know, I'm not someone who just wants to get in the sport and make a bunch of money and get out and, you know, appreciate a boxing, thank you. But, you know, I really love boxing. I'm a student of the game. I love this sport. I got so much passion and love for this sport. You know, it's hard to even explain it. So when things like that happen, it's just fuel to the fire for me to go out there and put on, you know, a spectacular performance. I want my name to be written in stone forever. You know, when people talk about boxing, I want them to have to bring my name up and in a way that can never be erased.
There is no way to bring your name up and not bring up your wife, Jordan's name. You guys just 5 months ago had Charlie and welcomed Charlie into the world. But on the night you won the title, you also proposed.
Yeah.
And having an opportunity to share your life with someone who becomes a partner and helps you through those challenges, the emotional challenges, the mental challenges, the physical challenges, and someone to really walk through life with, which it seems both of you do.
Yeah.
How has she helped you overcome some of the trauma and some of those things that an upbringing like yours or the things you've dealt with and those adversities can add to a man's life? What has she done to help you be more complete since you guys have been together?
She's amazing. She's, you know, for one, she's a D1 collegiate athlete. You know, she had a full ride to UNLV to run the 100-meter hurdles. So she knows what it's like to be an athlete and deal with some of those pressures and, you know, what comes with training, what comes with recovery. So it's easy for her to help, you know, for her to be a step ahead on knowing exactly what I need and when I need it. And one thing that me and JP have that I feel like a lot of people, at least in my generation, don't have is, you know, we're friends and we're friends first. There's some things that you might, that a fella might, you know, do to his wife that he wouldn't do to his friend. But for me, that's one and the same. You know, I would never want to disrespect my friend. You know, I would never want to turn my back on my friend. I would never want to do my friend dirty. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jordan is to me. So we got a real, you know, tight, close relationship. And she's like a cheat code. Really, I mean, she can do it all. Just, I mean, between the rental properties we have, the stocks, and the bonds, DB, you know, pension, and, you know, our retirement, life insurance, just helping me get all that set up with the team that we have. You know, I'm going from, you know, a bad credit score to, you know, I'm like in the 800s now.
If your old lady fix your credit, she the one, dog.
Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she's the type to like, well, if you get us rich, I'm going to make us wealthy.
Mm.
There's not very many girls like that out there, women out there like that, at least, you know, in this generation. And so in any generation, I mean, yeah. You know, whether it's cooking, you know, we have a chef in place now, obviously. But, you know, even before that, making sure I had all my meals, making sure I had all my pre and post shakes. If I need to go here for an appointment, I mean, she's like right on top of it, making sure that she wants to get me there. We're teammates. And so, you know, you know, I couldn't think of a better friend than Jordan. And, you know, I'm thankful, I'm grateful to have someone like her in my life.
I like to hear the stories, man, because
Here we go.
You're so intense. What's your game? I was watching a movie on the flight here, and the dude's game was he saw a woman, didn't have an umbrella in the rain, and he walked up and said, I want to catch all the raindrops so you don't get wet. I thought that was sweet. Yeah. What was your game, man? Because you got to a winner, but how do you run up on it? Because like you might be the suave, sexy, whispering the yeah, you know. What was it?
I'm more of a laid-back, quiet guy, so I was fighting in L.A. You know, I'm focused and all that, and then, just scrolling on Instagram, so I'm not staring at the wall for, 15 hours, just maybe overthinking or something like that. So I'm on Instagram scrolling, I see this girl like a couple of my pictures. I'm like, man, who is this? I'm scrolling, I'm like, man, if you ever see her, you got to say something to her. And then the next day, I'm weighing in, and I'm sitting in the chair waiting for them to call me up. I look over, and she's standing on the wall right there. And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, well, you said you got to say something to her. And so I weigh, and then there was like a water fountain machine, like with cups and stuff. And I'm sure she figured, after he weighs in, he's going to be at the water. So she's standing by the water, I go up.
She was waiting on you.
And I'm like, hey, I'm Caleb, nice to meet you. And, just make her laugh or something. As pretty as she is, it's like, I'm sure she's used to getting pressed or, what's your number and all this other thing. And, I don't want to be that type of guy. I'm not really that type of guy anyway. So I just told her, it's nice to meet you. And, I'm sure I'll see you around sometime. And
level one.
Just bounce, yeah. She even says to this day, she's like, well, you didn't ask for my fucking number. She was curious to why I didn't, I guess. So then a couple hours later, I had like a message on Instagram saying, hey, it was nice to meet you. I'm like, I know. It just started from there, and going back to focusing on my fight, had a really good fight. We just stayed in close contact and got to a point where, because of everything that happened in Tennessee, just a lot of things weren't working out for me. And I just felt like I needed a change, and she was out here in Vegas. And obviously it's not a bad place to be if you're a professional boxer. I would be on the same fights that I would regardless, but just the training and the amount of sparring and whether it be massages and just the whole nine, it's a lot of things going on out here, and I just felt like I needed a change. So after we talked for a little while, I moved out here, and the rest is history.
Hey, Caleb, we mentioned we did Errol Spence, we did Bronze Bomber, and we talk about their camps, how long their camps are, and if they have sex in camp leading up to fight, right? Whether
whether
it changes their mindset or whatever. And I'm sitting here, Jordan said, Charlie, it's 5 months, right? Yeah. She just turned 5 months. So I'm calculating the math from the Canelo fight. Uh-huh. We lands exactly at 14 months, 9 months to carry, 5 months is how old she is. You was fucking before that Canelo fight.
Nah, we had her after the Canelo fight.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But she's 5 months. So wait, Canelo
She was created after the
right
Canelo
after.
Fight.
Right after. So my math probably always. See, I got a bad thing about counting. So I'm going back to Canelo, November 2021, right? Mm-hmm.
Jordan, what's the math on this shit? We can't add. Get over there.
Yeah, come on, Jordan. Help us out.
What's the brains of the operation there?
But no, it's just kind of one of those inside things about fighters, like building up, not having sex and all that stuff. So
I'm abstinent for 8 weeks.
The nasty, nasty.
I'm abstinent for 8 weeks.
Okay, say again.
8 weeks, I'm abstinent.
Oh, wow.
And in no way, shape, or form have I ever made a mistake on any of that. From my pro debut to the Canelo fight, to the Darrell fight, 8 weeks. It don't matter how many times I fight a year.
Even with yourself? You abstinent with yourself too?
No mistakes in any way, shape, or form. 8 weeks before a fight, from my pro debut to now, and I don't care how many times in a year I fight.
And where did that number come from?
You've heard certain fighters talk about 6 weeks, 4 weeks. Yeah. I'm sure very few fighters do 8 weeks, but I'm the type of guy I don't want to, leave anything to chance. And if there's anything that I can do to push my boxing career forward, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make the most of it. And, it's just a short window. And why would I leave anything to chance?
Yeah, shoot. Well, I know what they'd be saying to me. They'd be like, Ryan, why do you only fight two times a year? Well, shoot, because that's 16 weeks, coach.
I can't give up. But you're different, though.
That's 4 months.
Because we talk about, you mentioned other fighters, you know, and when we see other fighters, we see entourages. You know, we've done these things, and that we see the homies, you know, at the gym. You know, you pulled up, your entourage was just your babies, your baby girls.
And my boy Gerald.
But you don't have an entourage. You're like, you're so focused, like Channing said, like you're all business.
Something my dad's always told me is, you know, you can look at the people before you and find out the do's and the don'ts. And, you know, it seems like one of the don'ts is every time someone has a big entourage, they wind up having to pay for everybody, mm-hmm. and they wind up having to, you know, do all these things. And then even that, like, I'm like someone, I like peace and quiet. You know, I don't like a whole lot of noise around me. And that gives me a chance to be with me and my thoughts. And if there's always a bunch of voices around me, you know, distracting me from my own voice in my head, telling me what I need to do and when I need to do it and the direction I need to go, you know, that just sounds like a distraction to me. And I'm not too fond on people anyway. So it's like, you know, I'd rather just be, you know, I got Gerald, I got my wife, my daughter, I got Jesse, and just a few select friends, and that's just how I like to keep it.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, too, the things you go through in life build certain boundaries that help you understand you don't need a ton of people.
Yeah.
And I love that about you, your self-awareness, also your self-assuredness. And you build your career up, and you have an opportunity to fight Canelo Alvarez once you become the champion. And it's one of those fights where people obviously understand who he is as a fighter, but they didn't necessarily know everything about you. When you ink that fight and you realize this is where your career is, what does it mean when you get the validation of being able to step in the ring with someone that was thought of as highly as Canelo Alvarez?
It was you know, a good thing, obviously, to be able to be a part of such a big fight. And, you know, Canelo, he's obviously a great fighter. He's done a lot of great things, made a lot of accomplishments, but it doesn't excite me that I get to be able to stand across from anybody in the ring. You know, I don't look at him as, like, someone that I need to be excited about. You know, I'm here on a mission. I'm here on a job. I'm here to, you know, accomplish my own goals and put my own name in the history books, not be excited that I get to stand across from someone who has already done that.
I respect.
You know, I look at myself as on the same playing field as he does. That's no disrespect to him or any other fighter, but that's just how I feel. I'm not excited to stand across from anybody. I'm excited to get my hand raised. And so as big a fight as that was, and you know, I put up a good showing, it was still a disappointment to me to, you know, to lose and then not get my hand raised. You know, I have an opportunity to right that wrong. Mm-hmm. I got a fight against David Benavidez March 25th. I win that, I become the WBC interim champ, and I become, you know, the mandatory for the WBC belt, yep, which Canelo has. And so right now I'm just grinding, focused, and, you know, I want the opportunity again.
We talk to a number of fighters, and some of them really don't seem like they have beef with people. They're just fighting. They're doing their job, I would say.
Yeah.
I've heard you have beef with Benavidez, and then to get to Canelo, the whole slap thing. What was the slap about? And it seems like you really have outside-of-the-ring issues with guys you fight.
Boxing is not a job for me, you know. Boxing is my life. And so anyone who's trying to get in the way of that or disrupt that, I mean, we just talked about some of the things from, you know, the time I started to here. I'm not trying to let anyone disrupt that or get in the way of that. And so it is personal for me. But as far as, like, the situation that happened with Canelo, that was him. He pushed me, you know. Right. If a man just walks up and shoves you, maybe some people would. I'm not just going to let that slide. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter how big you are, who you are, you know, you're going to have to show me. And so when he pushed me, you know, I did the first thing, you know, it's flight or fight. I mean, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm a fighter. So, and really, it's just, the whole reason that situation happened is because he come up and he was like, you're going to see, you're going to find out. And I'm like, all right, motherfucker, you're going to find out. And I guess in his culture, when you say motherfucker, that means something else. But he said that word multiple times to other people.
Yeah.
So he knows what it means. You know, he was just trying to create some type of storyline or some type of beef, you know, to get the views up, whatever. I'm not really sure. But after the fight, he apologized and he told me I'm a great fighter. I let him know he's a great fighter. Told him I would never talk about his mom. He apologized. He said he knows and that, you know. And so, but as far as the David Benavidez thing, I mean, that really started out as just something where we agree to disagree that I'm better, no, I'm better, no, I'm better. Okay, well, we just agree to disagree. Over time, I feel like it developed into something more where, you know, it's just normal fight banter going back and forth. But then, you know, it's like his dad hopped on an interview and said that I only talk about Aaliyah to get clout and to be famous, and that I don't need to talk about her no more. I just need to, you know, she's not here no more. I just need to be quiet and let that situation be, basically. I don't fuck with that. You know, he's liked pictures on my Instagram of me and Aaliyah in the hospital together, laying in the hospital bed together. You know, the dad, Jose Benavidez Sr., liking pictures like that. And it's like, if you, whatever you want to say about me, go ahead. You want to talk about my, about the bros, that's cool. You want to talk about my dad, that's cool. My boxing, anything you want to say. But once you start, you know, bringing up someone's mom, once you start bringing up their kids, their wife, that's like a different level. And that's like, what happened between me and Canelo, we shook hands after.
Yeah.
You know, some things you don't come back from. And that's not something that is ever reversible for me.
With that type of disrespect, because I label it as such, it, for me, that's disrespectful to involve family. We're just boxing. I don't think, well, I don't think they're familiar with, you know, the Daniel Henry fight, which was your first fight after losing your daughter, which was March of 2015. Yeah. And this fight is in March. Do we expect the same result that you did with Daniel Henry?
He was starched. it's hard to say. You know, there's a lot of variables that go into the ring. And I do expect to get my hand raised in fashion. I truly believe that. I believe I'm the better boxer. I'm the better fighter. I got the better pedigree. I got better coaches. I'm more disciplined, obviously. And but as far as, you know, being able to starch someone, there's a lot of variables that go into that. So, you know, we'll just have to wait till fight night.
Could you break down starch for our viewers?
Starch is, you know, when you put starch in your clothes and they stiffen up, that's what starch in somebody is.
I love that, man. You know, you've gotten to a point where I do believe people respect the way you go about your business. And to the conversation you spoke about you and Canelo having after your fight, that's something I've seen on social media over and over again, just earning that respect. But you still saying, I want to run that one back, right? I want to get my hand raised because I believe we are on the same tier. When you look back through your life and you think about where you come from, where you started, your father building a small gym for you to develop this passion, losing Aaliyah 2015, your mom, Beth, 2019, but continuing to live life, continuing to fight, now building this beautiful family. When you look back on all you have accomplished to this point, how proud of yourself are you that you had the stuff to make it through all this and be sitting here today?
I'm proud of myself, and not too often, because it seems like there's always another goal set, and you know, it's always time to get back grinding and focused and training. But there are times where I sit back and, you know, think about, you know, the moments that I've overcome, and from going to almost like being an outsider and not being accepted by his peers to being one of the top of his class amongst his peers, it does mean a lot. You know, some of the moments we've spoke on are just very few in the comparison that I've had to, you know, overcome. And, you know, I do pat myself on the back every once in a while. And but it seems like as soon as I do, it's always time to get right back to work.
Do you enjoy the fame? Because you seem somewhat of an introvert. I know you enjoy the money. We all love the money. But I remember the time where I opened Twitter, Instagram, and I saw Caleb Plant. And I started watching the videos like everybody else. Do you enjoy the fame?
And it's nice to be recognized for your hard work.
Yeah.
I don't box for money. There's a lot easier ways to make money. And that doesn't take the near amount, the discipline and the hard work and the abstinence and everything else that we spoke on. I don't box for free because if you're good at something, then you don't do it for free. Mm-hmm. But money's not my why. Fame is not my why. You know, I box because I love it. I box because, you know, boxing saved my life and I got a true passion for it. But as far as like being famous, you know, again, it's nice to be recognized, but it's not really like my thing, you know? Yeah. Whether people noticed who I was, I mean, I spent my whole life people not noticing or recognizing who I was. And I still believed in myself just as much. So whether people recognize me or not, you know, that's not why I do it.
A good friend of ours, Chad Ochocinco, he did an interview with Shannon Sharp speaking about time. Time is free. And I like to think that it's what you do with that time that costs. And you've done amazing with your time through the adverse moments, you know, still coming out on top, still coming out on top. And we're all hoping that it pays dividends for you March 25th.
Right here in Vegas, MGM Grand.
We all hope it pays dividends for you, man, because you seem like a warrior.
Thank you.
From afar, everything that Channing said, but up close, you're my type of guy. Laid back, chill, mellow.
Very
you know,
similar.
Just about your business, man. I love that. And I'm personally a fan, like from the heart. I'm a fan, so.
You can't fight.
It ain't got nothing to do with it.
He got detained by the police one time. Now you tough.
This is what we need to do.
He's the one person on this show that nobody wants to fight either, though. Like, everybody loves Freddie.
Yeah.
Like, it's different for him, man. He don't live the life that you and I live. Like, I probably need to come in here and train and let Caleb teach me some things, because I know somebody going to run up on me soon.
Don't get in there with him.
No, I said teach me some things. I didn't say I want to do it. The other thing is this, man, that we've learned, you know, in having opportunity to do this job, me doing UFC, is you can't judge a book by its cover. Some of the baddest men in the world are the most mild-mannered, the most humble. They sit back and they observe, and they don't feel the need to continuously prove to you how tough they are. You seem very similar to that. A question we often ask is, what's your biggest pivot? Because obviously the name of the show is The Pivot. We were all pivoting from something else. And we've talked about so many different things in your life that could be considered a moment you had to move on from and be better because of it. What would you point to as the one moment in your life that you think is most pivotal to Caleb Plant being who he is today?
I would say that the situation with Aaliyah, that was, I mean, I don't think there's anything in my life that's been as difficult as that. And that was a pivotal moment for me to either pack my bags or to pick them up and keep on trucking and keep on going. So there's a lot of moments, but I would pick the situation with Aaliyah. Just the whole 19 months with her. You know, that helped turn me into what I am today.
To hear you say the whole 19 months.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a short period of time to love someone that much. And so still, you know, I wasn't around then. I just met you today. I am sorry that you had to go through that. As a father of three kids, it is the most unimaginable thing in the world to me to have to do that, man. And the fact that you are still here today, the fact that you are still here standing, that there's a piece of her that lives on through you, and that level of fighter that she was is the level of fighter that you are. Man, best of luck on March 25th. We hope you win it. We will be cheering. We have a serious, serious issue of like falling in love with the fighters we do shows with. And you don't understand, bro, the stress we gonna feel on March 25th. So we need you to win, because we do not handle it well as a crew when like our people lose.
I got a connection with us.
Ain't no stress.
What's the connection?
I got a connection. CP, do you break your abstinence in fight night? Like we're gonna watch you fight. After that, later on, will you get it on?
Y'all probably won't see me after the fight.
I was gonna connect, because I was gonna tell my wife, hey, after Caleb fights, he about to get busy, so let's get busy, so we're almost getting busy together.
Yeah, yeah. Let's be like the champ.
Let's be like the champ. You know, so that's the connection there.
Yeah, that sounds like a good connection.
This guy crazy, man. He's crazy, bro.
Man, we look forward to it, man. This fight will be on Showtime, March 25th. Caleb Plant versus David Benavidez. And I'm with you, man. Some beefs don't get squashed. Some things can't be said. Yeah. So I look forward to seeing you handle your business inside the ring.
Thank you, man.
My man, appreciate it.
I'm sorry, man.
No, that is disgusting, by the way,
fun.
Man. That man don't want to be... That man,
but we not together. We're in different states.
That man going 8 weeks. He definitely don't want to be thinking about... actually not going to be thinking about you.
He's not what you want to think about me, but it's like, hey, we're celebrating this championship together.
limitless. Biggest to me, God pinning it. I father here to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust, limitless. Biggest to me, God pinning it. I father here to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up.